Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hello, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio today. Nice to have you with us. And listen, this is going to be amazing today. We're going to talk to a lady who has written a book about finding love in the second half. Maybe that's not the best way to put it. Finding love in the second chapter. All right, we'll do that way. That's the title of the book, Love in the Second Chapter, Finding Companionship and Romance After a Loss. And this is a book that's intended for people who, let's say they lost a husband, and then they're alone, and they don't have anyone to fall in love with, and they are looking for love in what we would call the second chapter. It's really an amazing subject, and there are a lot of people out there who are in this boat. As our guest points out, it's a book that's targeted toward people like her who didn't have a clue after they lost someone on how to get back out into the dating scene. And she also gives people encouragement to overcome the stumbling blocks they may face and provide ways to navigate safely through that process, ultimately to have a happy outcome. And really, it's not aimed at always, you know, older people. It could be people in their 30s, in their 40s, in their 50s, or any age struggling to get back into the dating scene. It's not just a book for elders, but it's a book for everybody. This is a great subject, and it's an amazing story, and I'm so glad the author of this book is with us this morning. She's in Rochester, New York. Her name is Patricia Fisk Harris, and we're going to talk about her decision to write the book and how she did it. She's with us right now. Patricia, welcome. It's really great to have you with us. I think this is a book that's sorely needed. And I wonder if you had done any research to find out if there was a book like this out on the market before you started. How would you answer that? What do you think?
Hi. I really appreciate your having me on the program this morning. I hope you can hear me all right.
I hear you okay.
Okay,
are you,
great.
Do you have your headphones back in? It would be better without them, but that's all right. We'll deal with it. Okay? Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes, I did do a little research before I wrote it to see if something like that was out there, and I couldn't find anything, you know, scrolling through Amazon and other publications, and I thought there's a definite need for information like this, so I think I'll write about it, and that's what I did.
I think that's great. By the way, have you ever written a book before, or was this the first one?
This is my first book.
It's a big challenge, isn't it? Did you find it easy to write?
Yeah, it took a lot longer than I thought, and I fell into editing hell, which I'm sure a lot of authors can identify with. And so it probably took me about 4 months to write the book and, you know, get it edited, and then another couple months to get it published. So it was a process for sure.
You know, 4 months is not bad, quite frankly. You know, some people work a year on a book, and then they go through editing, and, you know, it becomes a big process. And you did this by yourself? Did you have an editor, a publisher who, would, you know, was helping you along the process, or was it you alone?
No, I wrote the book myself. I didn't trust myself to do the editing, so I actually linked up with Kindle Direct Publishing, and they did the editing for me and put it in the format that could go on to Amazon and also Kindle. And I believe that there's an audiobook out now of that, you know, publication. So they took care of all the back office things, and I was really happy to be able to work with them. So it's been a good collaboration.
And when you say there's an audiobook, did you do the reading or someone else?
I did not. No,
you
someone
did not.
Else did. They gave me a choice of different people that I could use and clips of them reading a book. And I picked somebody that sounds similar to my voice, at least how I think my voice sounds. And I think she did a great job on it.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. I'm going to ask you one more technical question. Are you using your speakerphone right now or not?
I am Well, I thought I was, but I'm not really sure. That's how I got cut off the first time. So, yeah.
If you have the speaker on, cut the speakerphone off. We'll probably get a better connection, okay? And if I drop you, we'll call you, or you can call back. But
Is this any better for you?
I think so. We're hearing you, okay? I want to get into the story now. I know that you had a wonderful marriage with your husband, Bernard, and you have been married for a long time, over 56 years. Is that right?
Plus four years
of dating. Yeah. So
exactly right, Doug.
So when he passed away, you were left alone, and tell me how you felt. You know, it's hard for me to describe.
I knew,
you tell me.
I knew he was going to die. He had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's 7 years prior. So I knew that there was not going to be a good outcome. And I walked with him through that 7 years, grieving actually along the way. And then he did pass. And I was actually kind of surprised at how terrible I felt when he did pass away, because I thought leading up to this, I had plenty of time to get used to the idea. It wasn't a sudden death, obviously. But I think others would probably say the same thing. There's no good time to lose a spouse. And I did fall into another period of absolutely stunning grief after he died. And it took me a while to recover from that, which I lay out in the book.
So tell me a little bit about your thoughts of getting back into the dating scene. And for people listening to us, I'm going to ask you your age. I'm guessing, I don't want to guess. Tell me your age at this point in your life when this happened.
Okay.
It'll be helpful to others.
Certainly. I lost him when I was about 75 years old.
Wow.
And I'm 80 now.
Okay. So, see, that makes a big difference. People who are in their 30s and 40s wouldn't have the same kind of problems. So how did – I know you have remarried. You found a new husband, a guy named Roger. Tell me about how you met Roger and how this all began. Did you really enter the dating scene? Did you start looking up, elderly dating spots on the website or things like that, or what?
Yes, I did. I actually went online probably about 2 years after Bernie passed away. I thought, I don't want to be alone the rest of my life, and I want to see what else is out there. So now I'm 77 or so, and I started looking online. I went to Silver Singles and some of the other sites that focus on people my age. I tried Match.com. I entered the dating scene of It's Just Lunch. In other words, I put a lot of effort into looking where I might find somebody with similar interests and a similar need. And I write about those experiences in my book, because that alone was a pretty daunting effort. And it became very time-consuming over time. And so just to cut to the chase, I had several coffee dates and a few dinner dates with men who were very nice, and I had some that were kind of not. What I found was that I felt at that time maybe I was a little too early into it, because I was looking for a direct clone of my husband, and none of these guys were Bernie. They were all different, and I thought, my first thought about the first one I met, in fact, was, he's not Bernie. And so as soon as we had dinner together, I just thought, I don't want to see him anymore. He's not Bernie. And I had to get over that. And I write about those experiences because I think people like me don't know what to expect when they date. And so to make a long story short, I did that for a couple of years, and then I joined a singles group in my area. I had gone to church singles groups. I'd looked in a lot of different places. My singles group in my hometown had planned a cruise, and I decided to go on the cruise as a single with a group. And one night I decided I didn't want to sit with these people that I knew every day. So I wandered off and sat at a table for eight people, and lo and behold, to my left was a gentleman who I got to know. His name was Roger, imagine that. And he and I struck up a conversation, and we found out we were both scientists, had similar backgrounds. He had lost his wife, and to make a long story short, we started chatting every day on the boat, and then he decided to come and visit me, and we just kind of took it from there.
But that's pretty interesting. That's amazing. So, where did Roger live? And you, I know you live in Rochester. You're based in Rochester, New York, or in Texas. I mean, was he anywhere near you, or on the other side of the country?
No, in fact, so one of my criteria was find somebody local. Well, that immediately went down the drain. I was living in Texas, where my children are, and Roger lived and still lives in Rochester, New York. So one of the conversations we had when we were starting to really get serious about each other is, where are we going to live? And he did not want to leave Rochester because his children are here nearby, and I didn't want to leave Texas. My roots are there. My children are there. And so we came to a compromise, and I write about this in the book because I think it applies to everyone who, like me, finds a second love. You have to figure out, what are you going to do? And many people have two homes that they're, you know, when they're widowed or their relationship ends. And so now we split our time between his home in Rochester, which is nice and cool in the summertime, and my house in Texas, which is pretty moderate in the wintertime.
Well, that's a pretty good way to work it out. I can't help but wonder what your children were thinking about you at this point, going into the dating scene. You were in your mid-70s, you know, getting near 80. What did they say to you? How did they respond to your doing this?
Well, happily, I've done enough off-the-wall stuff in my life, and my kids are really pretty much nonplussed with all of it. But, you know, they didn't say anything about, be careful, there's scammers out there. They just knew I probably could handle it, and they were happy I was doing something to move forward in my life. And then once I introduced them to Roger and the concept that we might get married, they were just absolutely thrilled because, as my older daughter said, now we don't have to try to entertain you anymore. So, you know, they have been very happy and supportive from day one, and they just love him. And his children feel the same way about me, fortunately.
Well, that really helps a lot. Were you nervous about meeting his children? I'm sure that wasn't easy at the beginning. Tell me about that.
Well, actually, I wasn't, and I was. I'll put it that way. I'm a pretty confident individual. I've been in business for many, many years. I've met a lot of strangers in business as I was going through my career. So that wasn't particularly a daunting issue. But when we first came up here to Rochester to meet his children, it wasn't going to be just we'll meet this person, and then a couple of days later we'll meet this person, which would have been real simple and not intimidating. Oh, no. He had a daughter that was throwing a party for another reason, and that all of them were going to be there. And so I was going to meet them all at once. And not only that, I was going to meet his ex-girlfriend, who was the mother of this daughter. And that kind of intimidated me. But, they're just very real, sincere, sweet people. And even she, a former relationship of his, she was very nice and sweet, and so we got along just fine. I mean, we have ever since. We're just one big happy family. I feel I've known them all my life.
Well, you know, you're so lucky. I'm sure you must have felt like you were auditioning for the children when you went to meet them.
I kind of did.
Yeah.
And I got feedback right away through him that they just loved me. As soon as they met me, they just loved me. And he says now they like me more than they like him, so I guess I'm okay.
Oh, how about that? So tell me about the budding relationship with Roger. How long did it take for you to really begin to get serious with him? I know you were obviously looking for somebody really compatible. Talk to me again about how long it took.
Well, from the moment that we met on the ship, we were kind of inseparable for the rest of the cruise. And because he then came down to Texas and visited me on the way to visit friends, we actually planned another cruise together within the next couple of months. So we sailed again as separates for two more cruises. So I'd say in about 6 months, we started to really connect and feel like this was something that we wanted to go forward with. And from that six-month point on to about 14 months, we were in the process of getting to know each other, going back and forth between each other's houses, taking cruises together. And we got engaged in December this last year, which would have been about 14 months after we met, and then we decided at that point there's no point in putting off getting married because we have a limited number of years together. So I haven't quite known him for 2 years, but we've been married now for 102 days, I think.
102 days. When you met on that cruise, was he on the cruise for the same purpose you were? Was he looking for love? Would that be right?
No, he was not looking for. He was just looking to get away, get out, and kind of get his head back on straight because his wife had just passed away within the prior 5 months or so. And so he always liked to travel. He told his children, "I'm going to take a cruise," and they said, "What, by yourself?" And he says, "Yeah, you know." And it was just happenstance that he met me, and so he wasn't looking. I was, and then as soon as he saw me, he started thinking, "Look at that."
Tell me a little bit about living with another man after having lived with your husband, your first husband, you know, for more than 60 years. Was it hard getting together and agreeing on things that normally, you know, you had automatically agreed with your other husband? I'm just wondering about how life began when you start anew with someone. How would you answer that?
I would say, for me personally, it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be because he's a very loving and giving man. But he does have his own things that he likes to do in his own mind, of course. And he's very different from my husband. My first husband was a very quiet man, pretty much went along with whatever I suggested. And Roger is a type A, and I'm a type A. So that, you know, sets up some opportunities for us to have some interesting discussions, but we've never fought. We actually just got together, I think, rather seamlessly. We make each other laugh, and so we were happy together, and that was comforting. And I wasn't at that point comparing him to my prior husband. I was just thinking, well, this guy's great, and he's thinking I'm great, and you know, we really had no serious disagreements. The one thing I did learn I had to do was respect that his house is his house, and I couldn't remodel it and do things I wanted to do like I would do in my own home. And I think that was the biggest change for me, is I didn't have someone that would just pretty much do what I told them to do. And that was an eye-opener, but I kind of expected that. So it was easy. It was an easy transition and a delight, learning everything about him and more about our relationship every day.
Well, you know, I have the feeling you're really very, very lucky. It sounds like, you know, things are going great with the two of you. You have found an ideal second mate. So you are lucky. Do you feel that way? I think you should.
I do, and so does he. And our friends are so thrilled for us because we have found each other, and they have found us as a new couple. And so we are truly blessed. We truly are blessed. We do the same things, and we're just compatible in so many ways. I'm just so hopeful that through my book, others can find the confidence and the happiness that I have.
Well, let's talk about the book then. I think it's a great idea for a book. It's called Love in the Second Chapter, Finding Companionship and Romance After Loss. Let me ask you, how would you describe what people will learn from this book if they pick it up for the first time? And what is it you're trying to get them to understand?
Well, I think the bottom line is if they're alone and they've been searching or they're afraid to search, or they've had some bad experiences, if they've tried to find a new mate, that they'll take some heart from some of the things that I can impart to them. I hope it's a message of hope, and I hope that it's an inspirational book to everyone that really wants to find a new mate, that there are people out there, and they will have the same values, the same needs and desires that you do. And if you're very careful and you pick the right person, you can have that type of happiness. The other thing I hope people will learn from my book is the cautions that I found, you know, in looking at some of my friends and other people who haven't had a really good opportunity to have a second relationship, is how can you make sure you're the best person you can be to introduce yourself to someone else? And a lot of women, especially my age, don't think about it. They are, you know, maybe a little bit overweight, or they've let themselves go, or they think that somebody's going to fall in their lap and not expect them to be the best version of themselves. So I spend some time on telling people, you know, cautions on conversations and how to meld, you know, seamlessly with a partner who has their own ideas of how they want to live, their own politics, their own religion, their own set of friends, and how you can merge yourselves into a happy life by respecting each other and making sure you see the red flags. If there are problems with children accepting you, it's probably not going to get better. You may need to find someone else. So there's just a lot of common sense coaching, I think, in the book as well.
You know, you just mentioned a word that made me think. You mentioned the word politics. Are both of you in the same political atmosphere agreement, or one of you a Republican, the other a Democrat? How about that?
Well, I'll just say he's an independent, and I've been a Republican most of my life. So we've had some interesting discussions, but we respect each other's point of view, and we both are kind of leaning toward each other politically at this point. We are more centrist, and, you know, so we're getting along fine that way. I will mention at this point that I did have a lunch date with a gentleman who was a very, very strong conservative. And I knew after talking to him that there would be no reasoning or rationale if I expressed other viewpoints than his. And so that was actually the reason why I didn't have a second date with him. And I found people online who would actually post in their bio on these dating sites, if you are a Republican, don't even respond to this. So people have very, very strong feelings about politics. And fortunately, Roger and I are very respectful of each other, and we pretty much think the same way at this point.
Well, that's a big help. You know, you didn't mention Roger's age. You were what, 77, almost 80? What's his age?
He is almost a year younger than I am, so I'm his cougar. He's going to be 80 in August, a couple weeks before my birthday, and so he and I are both very healthy, very, I hate to use the word spry because it makes us sound like we're elderly people, which we don't consider ourselves, but we're very energetic. We have, thankfully, our health, and, you know, we can outwalk our kids, and, you know, so we're just very, very lucky that we feel we have many good years left to enjoy life together, and when we can't travel anymore, we'll have made a lot of great memories.
Wow, you are lucky. Good for you, and good for you to make the effort to find somebody. I'm sure there are a lot of elderly ladies and men as well who just don't have the gumption to want to try to even look for someone else at their, you know, if they're in their mid-70s. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely do, and that's one of the reasons I wrote the book is, you don't have to be alone. You have so many good years left of your life. Why spend it by yourself? You know, take the initiative and learn from some of the things that I learned kind of the hard way along the process, and you can have as a lovely companion for the rest of your natural life, and I think that's worth going for.
Are there any specific struggles that you have had to deal with, you know, settling down with a new mate? Who, of course, is different from the man you live with for so much of your life. And I'm just wondering if there are any tips you could pass along to some of our listeners who might be in the same boat you are and who can learn from your experiences. How would you answer that? I mean, the toughest thing you've found, you know, living with someone new. How about that? What would it be?
Not being in charge. Because I was always in charge.
Okay.
And I told him before I married him, I said, I will never fight with you. My first husband and I were very kind to each other. If we had disagreements, we talked about it, we worked it out. We didn't fight with each other. You know, we were very respectful, and I wanted him to know I would respect him. Because he's not a follower, and I can be. That was kind of the tipping point for me, was learning when should I let him take the lead and when would he let me take the lead. And we've found really great balance in that. But I will say, as an aside, he's very tidy. and I am too, but he's more tidy than I am. So if I would leave a cupboard door open, he would tell me about that. And I thought, wait a minute, you know, this is a small thing. And it kind of irritated me at first, but my God, he's got me trained now. So I shut the doors when I open them. And, you know, it's kind of fun and it's kind of a delight to be brought up short and not think, well, I'm not the queen of the universe. You know, I should probably get my head on straight here too. So I guess that was about the worst of it. So I really haven't had much of a struggle, to be honest. And I don't think he has either. He's very forgiving and loving. And, you know, we're just we're doing the best we can. So
do you find you both like to do the same things? For example, like to go to the same kinds of movies, watch the same kind of television shows, things of that nature, listen to the same kind of music? How about that?
Absolutely, and that was another delightful discovery. We both like country music, we both like jazz, we both like to travel, obviously. We both like to watch the stock market. We, you know, have kind of the same routine in the morning. We kind of have coffee and kick back, and then we get up and do something, and it's just seamless. It's just, it's like I'm being with another version of myself or my former husband. He's just so easy to get along with.
I must say, I think you truly are indeed very lucky. Good for you. Obviously, you are someone who's willing to cooperate and, you know, you aren't forcing yourself to be the boss all the time. So you're compatible. And that's critical, to be compatible. You've found love with someone very compatible with you.
I did. I'll say one other thing, Doug, about that. Number one, I was a microbiologist, and then I became a director of sales. And I found out through my sales career, the customer is always right. You got to give the customer what they want. And I kind of look at Roger as my customer, you know, and if he wants a certain thing, I will fulfill that if I possibly can. If I can't, I'll be honest and direct and say, you know, I can't do this, but I can do that. Or I can provide this but not that. And just pure, simple, you know, conversation takes care of a lot of issues that could crop up and be, you know, a cause of resentment.
I must say, this is a very interesting conversation. I think there are a lot of people who could be hearing this that are learning a lot from you. No question about it. Again, the book is called Love in the Second Chapter, Finding Companionship and Romance After Loss. And, you know, we're lucky to be able to be talking to Patricia Fisk-Harris, who is the writer of this book. The book is available on Amazon, obviously at Barnes & Noble and other major bookstores everywhere. It was just published in February of this year. So it's a new book. I understand you might write some other books. They're brewing in your brain. Is that right?
I'm actually halfway through one. It's going to be something about the title, something like Real Stories of Finding Companionship and Romance After Loss. And I'm interviewing people that I'm finding everywhere who are on their second or third relationship and how they found the person and, you know, what obstacles they had to overcome and how's life for them now. And I think it'll be an interesting read. It'll be, you know, some case studies, to coin a phrase. So that will be the next one. And I have a couple others in mind as well. So it should be a nice opportunity for me in the future to write more.
Boy, this is a whole new life for you, isn't it? Writing books,
it
which
is.
You hadn't done before, and a new mate, and life is great. Congratulations. That's what I say to you. Congratulations. Thank you so much for talking to us and giving us this aspect of your life right now. It's amazing. Again, everybody, the title of the story, the book, is Love in the Second Chapter, Finding Companionship and Romance After Loss. And it's by our guest today, Patricia Fisk-Harris. Patricia's been great chatting with you. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot from you, and I'm sure our audience has as well. So good luck, and let us know when you're going to have a new book, and we'll talk to you again, okay?
Thank you so much, Doug. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You are very, very welcome. Well, that's it for this edition, everybody. Hope you enjoyed this. I'm sure a lot of people have learned a lot, and it's really been great having you with us. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
Boy, we sure do. I'm Doug Llewellyn. That's it for today, everybody. Talk to you next time. Till then, bye for now. Yeah.